Grafton, welcome to the Freedom Footprint Show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, good to see you again, Grafton. How have you been?
Always
since
good
Prague?
To see you as well, man. Yeah. It hasn't been too long. It's just a couple of weeks at this point, but I feel like we've seen each other quite a lot recently.
Yeah, before that was Warsaw, and before that was Riga, I guess.
Madeira, of course. Basically, every time I go anywhere, I can pretty much assume that you're going to be there, I feel like.
It tends to be. What did Joe Hall call it? A traveling circus band thing. Yeah. That's what we are, I guess.
Sure is, yeah. But I think that it's always like, that's what's a lot of fun is we travel a lot, but we always wind up in really cool places. And yeah, it never gets old.
No. And you're in the studio that was built for BTC's Prague specifically, right?
Yeah, is not specifically for BTC Prague, but, I work in Satoshi Labs, so Trezor as well. And so Trezor built like a really nice podcasting studio. And I am getting to use it today. I feel honored. It's very nice. Probably the nicest studio I've ever been in. So we have nice microphones and camera set up. So I hope I look good for everybody.
You do. Certainly do. So you live in Prague, but you're not from Prague. You have a bit of a dialect there. Can you give us the TLDR on Grafton Clark?
Yeah.
Please?
So, born and raised in Mississippi. So that is a dialect you're hearing there, that southern accent. So I do have the old southern drawl.
Am I SSI, SSI, PPI? Is that?
Yeah, yeah. Crooked letter, humpback if you can't read, you know, like most people from Mississippi. Yeah. But yeah, I've been here in Czech Republic like 13 years now. So it's home. I really love it here.
Yeah. It's Prague is a great city. It's my favorite big city. Like, I can't think of one that I like better than Prague.
Well, there's not too many places. Like we travel a lot. We were just talking about, but there's always like that feeling of I'm coming home when I get back to Prague. And it's like, I always compare when I travel, I was like, all right, could I live here? Would I want to live here? And, you know, like Lisbon's nice. I love Lisbon, but I don't want to live there. Prague is kind of that. It has everything that I was looking for. And the pace of life is really nice here. And the people are, you've been here. Czech people are great. We have a really good Bitcoin scene. And yeah, it just feels like where I was supposed to be.
Yeah, we definitely like Prague. I mean, Obviously, BTC Prague brings everyone there, but yeah, I mean it's great. I made sure to visit Prague as soon as I was living Europe side before either of the BTC Prague events. But I'm curious, what brought you to Czech Republic originally?
Yeah, I studied history, so. You know, like growing up, I had, if we can get into that as well, but I had like a crazy childhood full of like entrepreneurial everything. And then I went to university and I didn't know like what I wanted to do. Of course, like every, 20 year old that gets out of, you know, says like, all right, what do I do? So I started to figure out, you know, taking all the classes, never had one that got me, but then I had this history teacher. And I think if most people can remember one or two teachers that made an impact on them. And I had this history teacher who just spelled out class, taught like it was the best book or movie that I'd ever, you know, been. I wanted more and more and more. And so I really fell down that history kind of rabbit hole. And as I started to kind of get into there, Czech Republic was always one of the things that was most fascinating to me. Is like, I want to go there. I want to see what makes this so different than everyone else. And I did a study abroad, like my version of Erasmus, kind of. Europeans have Erasmus, but we had just study abroad. And I did mine in the UK, actually in Kent, down in Canterbury. And I came to Prague for like a 4-day weekend. And yeah, I had so much fun. Like a lot of people who come to BTC Prague for 3 or 4 days, they come back and they go, oh, I'm going back next year. I couldn't wait to come back. So after I graduated, you know, I graduated with a degree in like history teaching. Like I was supposed to teach high school kids. I was like, all right, I'm going to do 1 year, go over there, take a break, relax, hang out. And then a blink and it's been 13 years. It's crazy. So that was just like, you know, it was like, I want to go check it out. And here I am. But I could ask you, you know, the same as you said, you were from Canada and you wound up in Finland. Like, I guess they're both cold and kind of like, you know, in the same area. So like, what, why would you go over to Finland? What put you there?
No, it's funny. I was hearing your story and thinking just so much parallel, just some kind of fascination for a long time. I mean, I'm not quite as long in my stay. It's coming up on 3 years here shortly, but I have exactly the same feeling of whenever I get back to Helsinki. It's like I'm coming home. It feels like home. And yeah, I've been interested in a lot of the sort of the cultural historical stuff. I did a pod for a few years on mythology, mostly Norse and Finnic stuff. And so yeah, just the interest was always there. And then when I got the chance to transfer to my company's Finland office, took it. And yeah, I think I'm aiming to stay. So yeah, there's something about Europe that hopefully the entire thing doesn't fall apart, because there's some pretty cool places here. And I personally love being nearby to be able to travel to different places. Like I'm sure it's even better from where you are, right?
Well, I mean, we're pretty central for sure. So I mean, it's easy to get everywhere. And I mean, I mainly travel for work. I can't remember last time I had like a vacation for myself where I went somewhere. But like, that's why, you know, I even joked at BTC Prague on my talk. I was like, everyone just thinks that I am on vacation all the time, whether it's my parents or my girlfriend or my friends, because I'm always somewhere nice. But it's like, yeah, what is a dream job is finding a job that allows you to get somewhere where you can travel and do things you love. And that's kind of, I can't imagine living somewhere, you know, far away like Australia, where you're really isolated, or even the US. I feel, and I mean, you talk about, you're worried if Europe falls apart. Like I saw the United States fall apart. You know, I grew up in that, you know, where as a kid from now, it's just a completely different place. And then I can't imagine ever going back there and trying to live or start a family or anything. So here it works for now, you know, and like you said, studying it is like looking at Czech Republic has historically been a very peaceful place and full of people who, you know, kind of hack the planet or hack the system in a way that they never really get taken over. You know, it's like they might be occupied, but they've never really been conquered.
No, and the word defenestration comes to mind.
Yeah,
it's a great word. I think we should adopt more defenestration here and there on the planet, right?
Yeah, we could definitely use some of that right now, I think. Yeah. So, and can it, where are you based mainly? Cause I basically only see you out in the world. Never.
Yeah. I'm based in Spain, but I am from here in Sweden. So like, yeah, a couple of years back, or 3 years back now, we decided to move down to our holiday home in Spain. And now we've sold off both the old homes and have a new home in Spain, mainly for the sun and getting out of the cold and the darkness. And also just to reset life and like try to going full time with Bitcoin, I needed a change of environment, I think. So that was part of the deal too. So far I like it down there. The politics are bad, but they're sort of bad everywhere. So if you can avoid them, that's good.
You're kind of like becoming like a Hemingway of Bitcoin in a way, I feel like. You know, you got the look, you know, you're the boat, you know, the boat guy, the sailor as well. And like, yeah, it's a good vibe, man.
Well, thank you. But speaking of history, like when I was younger, I was never really into history, but it wasn't like until later in life where you sort of realize that like right now I'm pushing 50, like I'm 48 this fall. And you sort of feel like that's half a century, like that means that you can put yourself in this context. So like 50 years has passed since I was born, and if you just rewind the tape back a couple of those half lifetimes, you end up in, you know, when the Hansa was a thing, and the things are so close in history to, and you don't really realize that as a kid. You think history is like, oh, this is way, way back. Yeah, and just looking at like the Beatles or Jimi Hendrix or something like that, which is when I grew up, says like, these are old bands. This is ancient history, and it's just 10 years before or 20 years before the bands that you like and grew up with. Like, so it's yeah, time is weird like that.
Yeah, I mean, time blinks, you know, like BTC Prague was a month ago. And I like, it's just, everything is moving at this lightning speed now. And when you're a kid, everything moves so slow. And then now it's, you can't get control of it. No matter how hard you try, you can't ever get ahead, or like, you know, you'll never beat time. And, you know, there's like nothing, you know, nothing fucks you like time, I would say.
But it's a symptom. Like that means you're living a good life. Like, because like the more fun you have, the faster time flies by. So
yeah,
it means you're
too
not
much
bored.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm definitely not bored, but yeah, sometimes you want to sit back and be like, where did, you know, I'm 36 now and I'll be 37 and it's already half a year of that, you know, gone. Time flies.
No one told you when to run. You missed the starting gun.
But I mean, for me, like music, that was really like one of the things growing up, that, because, you know, I grew up in a small Mississippi town where, you know, we didn't have a lot. And music was the thing that started pulling me outside of my bubble. Because it wasn't just like going to see a band, you know, one off. I listened to like jam bands. So like, you've heard of the Grateful Dead, right? So I'm one of these kids that grew up, you know, following bands around the country. I've seen like my favorite band in concert like 130 something times, all over the United States. Widespread Panic.
Oh yeah, I have Fractal's favorite band as well.
Yeah. So the crazy thing about that is, when in the BTC Prague, Fractal was having trouble like shipping the stuff out on a Sunday, and I was like, "Hey man, I can help you. I live here. No problem. I can help you." And so I like shipped it stuff, you know, the next day, got there, everything was fine. And then I was just like checking something. I saw that he retweeted it. And so I had, of course, send him a message. I was like, "Are you a fan?" He's like, "Yeah." So we were like chatting about that. He's like, "I was actually at their show last Sunday." So, but I've been over here so long that I kind of stopped going. But actually this time last year, I went to Iceland to see another one of my favorite bands for like 3 nights in concert. And so that was kind of what really got me like traveling, and what pushed me outside of Mississippi was you started meeting friends at concerts all over, and I wound up in Texas at university and then Europe. So
yeah, I have a similar story to that. And added to that all the sailing stuff, of course, but yeah, music was also like a big pull to the larger world than your own little bubble.
Yeah, and you know, like even like the, you know, getting into like, well, peer to peer, is these were bands where you actually tape the concerts. So like they allow taping. They encourage people to come to make live audience recordings, and then they encourage people to trade those tapes peer to peer. So it's like, if the best way to share music is made to be shared. So you saw something, you go, "Hey man, you got to check this out." You give it to them. And so this, from my early ages, I wasn't doing like illegal file sharing. You know, I definitely had Napster, but my early days were actually like trading tapes and using like torrents to share like music concerts peer to peer. And so that was like, that really was what kind of got me into that path of understanding what a peer to peer technology is and why we need it and how it works. So I can blame music for all of the good stuff that's happened to me most of the time.
That's great. Me and Luke went to a concert after BTC Prague last year. We went and saw Pantera, reunited, or like half of Pantera, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah.
My wife's favorite band of all time. And she had just become pregnant with our kid just before Prague. So she unfortunately didn't get to enjoy it as much as possible, but she still loved it. We're both too young to have managed to see them at their heyday.
I'm sure the baby could hear it as well. As yeah, the Panteras.
And me, as being an old safety officer, the first thing I did was look for the fire exits and stuff. And then we was like crammed into this crowd, and all of a sudden there's one of those, what do you call it, when people start a mosh pit.
Mosh pit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like just a couple of meters away from us, and like,
All right, yeah, I'm a bit too old for this.
I learned my lesson. I went to see a band, a Czech band here, and I was, you know, with my girlfriend at the time. I was like on the front row, you know, like looking around. I was like, oh, this is, you know, these people are getting pretty crazy. And I turned and looked, and when I did, someone jumped, stage dove off the stage, collapsed me to the floor. I had a hairline crack in my neck, so I had to like take stretchered out to the hospital. And so now when I go to concerts, I stand in the back by the soundboard. I want to be right in front of the soundboard so I can hear good and not be a part of the chaos anymore, because
yeah,
I can't go through that ever again.
Were you at the Rockamoto? I can't remember.
No, I was not at Rockamoto this year. I was so exhausted. That was like the, you know, we had the Cypherpunk meetup on Thursday, and then I had my talk on Friday, and just preparedness of everything. I was exhausted after the thing. So I stayed at the after party. I think I was in home in bed by 10. But Saturday night, I closed down the PVA Lethiani like area. We closed it down. So we had fun.
Good
something,
to hear.
Something for everyone at that conference. Can't wait to see what they'll pull out next year. Nothing but rave reviews from this last year for BTC Prague. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the same everywhere I went. You know, you chatted with people who went to BTC Prague, and everybody has the same kind of consensus, which is like, don't miss it. It's a lot of fun. And I love that, because this is my hometown. And Prague really is kind of like the true Bitcoin capital of the world. I really feel that.
Absolutely.
And a lot has been done here and still happening here. And you can feel it. You know, you have El Salvador, you have these places where stuff is happening, but it's a completely different thing. This is the Bitcoin capital for people, I would say, not for anything else.
So can you take us through that a little bit? The history?
Yep.
Whatever you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been into Bitcoin quite a long time. You know, this is the home of, you know, Paralini Polis and Bitcoin Coffee, the first place that I ever, you know, knew where I could spend Bitcoin for coffee was here. But it's also where Trezor was invented, which is the world's first hardware wallet. They have like, even behind me, like the early prototypes here in the studio. Even I used to work at Trezor as well. But you have Slush Pool, which is now Brains, which is her. BTC Prague, General Bytes, the guys who made the ATMs. So there is something to be said about a post-communist country that, you know, is no one really understands what it means to have freedom like those living in a post-communist state. And I think that you've seen the true reaction to that here. And you have some great minds who really, the Czech Bitcoin scene is very strong. And then last year after BTC Prague, this company enabled you to pay with Bitcoin in nearly 5,000 restaurants and pubs all over Czech Republic. They have these QR codes.
What's that called?
Querko. Q-E-R-K-O, yeah.
Yeah, I downloaded it. I never got to use it, but I have it on my phone, yeah.
It's super easy. I mean, you just scan a QR code and then choose how you want to pay. You pay Lightning, Bitcoin, scan it, and you're done. You walk out. Nobody says anything. And I mean, the waiter doesn't know that you paid in Bitcoin. I mean, if we're being honest, it's mainly the company who's processing the transactions for them. But certainly it allowed for spending your Bitcoin wherever you want, which is a good thing.
Yeah, this is sort of a philosophical thing with the Bitcoin as a medium of exchange of it all, right? Like that forcing restaurants or wherever to adopt Bitcoin and have this whole other layer it's sort of the other way around, right? You have people who want to use Bitcoin. Well, just make it easy for them and get it flowing around and then that's fine. And then you don't have the overhead and the waiting with merchants, right? But is there merchant adoption as well in Prague beyond the sort of Paralini Polis scene and all that?
Yeah, I would say there is. You know, there definitely are some places I would have to look at, like, you know, CoinMap or something. But certainly there are coffee houses and tea rooms where it's not just they're accepting Bitcoin as a payment. There are pizza places that accept Bitcoin as a payment. You know, and I think that it's definitely becoming more and more part of, I don't know if there's many Czech people who haven't heard of Bitcoin or don't know what Bitcoin is or why it matters in a lot of ways. I mean, yeah, there are a lot, but I think Czechs are definitely familiar with the idea. You know, adoption is very strong here. in Czech Republic. I mean, if I look at, you know, the success that we've had with Vexel, it's remarkable to see how quickly people have taken to it and really started to understand that they have this ability to buy and sell not just Bitcoin, but eggs and honey and beef jerky and find jobs and everything else. So you really are starting to see that circular economy aspect start to take place here as well.
So yeah, this leads us to Vexel. And I'm excited by the project and when you explained it to me how it works, because I think like Vexel is to local Bitcoins what BTC Pay Server is to BitPay, if you know what I mean by that.
Yes.
So we're sort of going away from these honeypot centralized bullshit things to things that are actually peer-to-peer. And so please, Grafton, give us the TLDR on Vexel and why it's so awesome and why it has so many synergies with other developments in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, so you kind of hit it right there, which is like local Bitcoins. Local Bitcoins is great, but you know, it kind of didn't scale over time and it had its own issues and had a different type of reputation system. And so when we were kind of figuring out, you know, what is Vexel and how do we build something that we want to use? It was actually Slush's idea. Mark from Trezor is sitting on his sofa one night. I think he was like, okay, so if I want to buy or I want to sell Bitcoin, what's the best way to do that? And there's not currently a great solution. Like, no matter how you frame it, there's problems with them and they don't scale. And you look at centralized exchanges and the KYC nightmare and the data nightmare that they have. You look at, you know, other previous peer-to-peer applications or things like that. And there was always a but this and a but that. So what is Vexel? Vexel is a mobile app that allows you to peer-to-peer Bitcoin without KYC the way it was intended. And so what I mean without KYC, that means there are no excuses, no exceptions whatsoever. We do not touch Bitcoin. We do not touch fiat. We are a nonprofit. We created Vexel as a tool to empower the individual to have that freedom to transact. So what it does is it leverages your real world reputation and your real world social graph that creates a web of trust that allows you to trade with friends and friends of friends. And that's it. It never goes further than that. So Knut, I know you. I don't know Luke, right? But you know Luke. So I can trade with Luke by knowing and leveraging my connection with Knut. So I don't know who Luke is. I just see that Luke has posted an offer that he's selling Bitcoin. I don't know who that person is. I see a random Japanese name similar to Satoshi. And that's where the offer appears. But I do see that I have common friends. And I have, in this instance, one common connection. And that connection is you, Knut. So I say, hey, we don't know each other and we don't have a lot of mutual friends. But we both know Knut, so if it's okay with you, I'm going to send him a message. You don't have to tell him anything else. If you don't want him to give me your name or anything, just you also send him a message. Since we're both messaging him at the same time, he's going to know that we want to verify that. Knut doesn't have to be a Bitcoiner. He doesn't have to be on Vexel. None of that to be able to be in that and to leverage his trust. So Knut says, hey, yeah, Luke's a good guy. We do a podcast together. You can trust him. I go, all right, I trust you. Now, Luke, if you screw me over, Knut's going to have things to say, because I'm certainly going to tell him like, yo, Luke screwed me over, man. And it's going to damage your real world reputation. So we talk about how do we create something that scales? Well, over time, this truly scales, because then you go from having one friend in common to two friends, to 10 friends, to 25 friends. And you can be damn sure if I have 25 or 30 friends in common with somebody, that the trade is going to go well. And if that person's not already a friend, I probably want to make them one.
Natural follow-up question for the suspicious Bitcoiner here. Mm-hmm. How does the app get this information? Where does it get it from and where does it store it? And does it go to a server somewhere?
So everything happens on your device locally. So your phone number is used to build out your web of trust, your social graph, because currently we do not have one that's any better than that. Your phone number is what you share with your friends and your loved ones. Everybody is still using WhatsApp as their main form of communication outside of Bitcoin. So my aunt, my uncle, they're going to have a web of trust based around their phone number. What Vexel does is it hashes your phone number and it uses the hashes to build out that network. But the way we handle data is means that we do not know your phone number. No one else knows your phone number. No one gets a notification that says, hey, Luke joined Vexel, like you see on every other messaging platform. No, this is done in a fully anonymous and discreet way. So your hashes are built out, but we split the data across four different microservices that never communicate with each other, right? So your phone number hashes are hashed, they're coupled on your device, the hash is built off the network, your offers are encrypted separately, your chats are end-to-end encrypted, and your profile is encrypted, and they never communicate with each other. So let's say that, for the argument's sake, as people say, well, phone number hashes are really trivial to you know, get the number from the hashes. And that might be true. But if someone does that, they're going to get a giant list of phone numbers that are not connected to Bitcoin. They're not connected to anything, and they have no value, because I can randomly generate numbers with AI that are more valuable, because we don't have any information about what those phone numbers do. Because when I import them, I import everyone I know, every contact number in my phone, because each one of them is essential to my social graph. So my dog walker, she's not a Bitcoiner. Well, her number appears there. Why? How is that connected with anyone else? It's not. They don't have value if there's no data attached to them, and there's not. So we have a really good blog about this on our like blog you can check out to really see how that splits the data.
This is so fascinating, because we've been riffing on app ideas ourselves around this concept that since Bitcoin has so pointed out to everyone in the world that money doesn't need to be anything but information, nothing else does either. So you can just, like, between people you trust, you can do so much without ever touching any network of any kind. There's so much to explore there. And like, the natural follow-up here is, like, is there on the roadmap for Vexel, is Noster somewhere on the roadmap? Because this sounds like something that would be built upon Noster and not telephone numbers in the future, right?
Yeah. So because a better web of trust doesn't exist right now, of course, phone numbers is the natural way. I mean, who has a better one? Maybe Facebook has a really good web of trust, right? Because it's old now, it's established, but creating a new one is very difficult, right? So looking at Noster integration, yes, of course, we're curious and we're interested in to go down that path. But right now, you're looking at something like 25,000 active weekly users. We are five people and a dog. We need to work and focus right now on actually building out the best version of our app. And then as Noster's web of trust and social graph starts to grow and starts to come, we, of course, naturally will eventually replace phone numbers in every system of every web of trust. And you've already seen that happen with things like Telegram usernames, or even now Signal usernames is Threema session. You're starting to replace these with keys. And so what Noster is doing is certainly interesting. But right now it's just not a viable, like, web of trust to use to trade Bitcoin with, because this is, you know, when I look at how I do peer-to-peer trades on Vexel, is I'm not doing them digitally. I'm meeting you underneath a statue of the horse in Old Town Square in Václavské náměstí, in the center, like, you know, Wenceslas Square, as they call it in English. I'm meeting you under the horse. I'm giving you cash and you're giving me Bitcoin and I'm walking away, right? Most of my Noster web of trust is, well, you're in Sweden right now and Luke's in Finland. And, like, I'm sorry, even though I know you, I still don't want to send you a digital bank transfer, because I don't want my name appearing in anyone's bank account for any reason.
No. Now, this is the thing. This is the problem with exchanges in general. As soon as you touch the banking system, you're fucked. Like, it's the on and off ramps, as they call them. But I prefer like the terms proper system and legacy bullshit system. Like that's, and you don't want to touch the legacy bullshit system because it comes with all of the baggage that we're trying to get away from, right?
And that's like the very thing, right? Is that if you're like, people ask me like, oh, is Nosfer coming? It's like, well, if you are like, because my Bitcoin friends are on Nosfer, but my Bitcoin friends don't live around the corner from me, right?
No.
My phone number, the people that I have my phone number, that's everyone. That's my cleaning lady, my dog walker, the people that I get beers with on Tuesday evening. You know, these people, they live in this community and they have friends that they trust that I don't know, you know? But I can meet their friends on a Wednesday afternoon, have a coffee, do Bitcoin, or I can meet the farmer who's selling honey, who I know through, you know, my colleague, who I like. I had no idea. I didn't need to ask my colleague, hey, do you know anybody that's selling honey? But I see on Vexel, there's an offer. Oh, I share two people with my colleague. Oh, yeah, I got a honey guy now, right?
So that's great.
That's how you, yeah, exactly. Is the honey pot is like actual honey, you know, not anything else. Yeah.
You've replaced the honey pot with the actual honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's super cool. And I see so many synergies with like, we talked to Svetsky in Prague about the Satlantis project. Do you know about that, right?
Yeah. I unfortunately slept through the Satlantis thing on it. But Josef Tetek, I was supposed to present and Josef did a wonderful job. So thank you. Thank you to Josef for taking over for me. But yeah, I talked to Alex for a while and I really like this because this was using my example, which is if you visit Prague, please don't look at TripAdvisor.
No.
Like contact me, ask a friend. And that's exactly what we have to learn how to leverage is like friends and friends of friends is like, maybe I don't know the best vegetarian restaurant in Prague because I'm not a vegetarian, but I certainly have a few friends who could tell you that answer.
Yeah. And I could easily see Vexel integration with that.
Mm-hmm. Go into a city. Yeah. I mean, visiting a new city, seeing maybe how you can turn local shitcoin into Bitcoin before you leave. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Or Orange Pill app. Like if you have both the apps, you could just start chatting on there and then see the Vexel offer. I guess if you have the one, you don't really need the other. But yeah.
But I think, you know, that I like the idea. But, you know, the thing is going back to like local Bitcoins. I mean, we're talking about local is I really think that the best way to do that is really face to face. So, but with Satlantis, I mean, that's a really good kind of thing because you are visiting a city and there might be, you know, is, hey, I'm in Istanbul for the weekend. Well, I know somebody who has three really good friends who live there. So they're going to give me advice. They're going to tell me who I can buy Bitcoin from, this kind of stuff as well. So I do think there's some synergies between them. And, you know, that's what we want to ultimately create is something new, a private marketplace for the people that's not polluted by advertising and greed and everything else.
Well, so, I mean, it's a great vision. And I think leveraging some of the synergies with the other applications, I think, as you say, maybe it'd be good to look into those things in the future. But if the focus is on keeping it local, it's fantastic. My initial thought on that is that the zero to one-ing of it, that getting onto the app and, well, what if you don't have any contacts that are already on the app? I mean, of course, one of these things is you just got to kind of get a sort of a hook in some location, right? Some person or group of people that actually adopt the thing. But I figure I have tons of great contacts on Telegram, but not very many are actually phone number contacts, you know? So there's just a couple of these things that are a little bit of friction that are probably not making it quite so easy to use at this point. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, we're all familiar with Gradually and then Suddenly, and with Czech Republic is a very good example of that. Is right now, you know, there's like over 6,000 users in the country. If you want to buy Bitcoin this afternoon, you can do that. This time last year, you could still do it. It maybe took a little bit longer. But right now, I mean, there's liquidity on there. People are buying and selling Bitcoin every day. And I can see every time I open the app, I check. I'm a curious person, so I check and I see my number's grown. My number gets bigger. So you can actually, when you open up your app, if you go to the settings page and look up in the very top corner, It'll say your reach, and your reach is how many people you could potentially Vexel with. And that number grows almost every day, every time you open the app. So to someone who I can say, well, okay, I don't have many offers in my area. Well, why haven't you created one? And every marketplace, whether that be Craigslist or Facebook or your local classifieds ads in the newspaper, were empty at some point. It took people actually posting offers. It took people, you know, as Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams said, if you build it, they will come. And we built it. We are still building. We still have a lot of ways to go and improving and really making the tool for everyone. But I'm really proud of our UX. I'm really proud of how the app it looks and how intuitive it feels for most people. You know, I can put it in the hands of my mom or my dad and it makes sense to them. And that's what we're going after. But if you don't have an offer in your area, if you don't have many contacts, you have to do two things. You have to start talking about it to other people, telling them, try this out. If we build this private marketplace between us, it will happen, and create an offer. If you want to buy, say you want to buy. If you want to sell, say you want to sell. If you're curious, if maybe you just want to meet somebody for a coffee and do a symbolic, you know, 20 euro trade just to see and test out the app, put that there as well, because you might meet somebody in your community. Maybe you have a small town. Maybe you didn't know there were other Bitcoiners around and that you were connected. And the next thing you know, you can put together meetup. You can get more people in, but it's really word of mouth, grassroots. You got to talk about it. And you know, because we're a nonprofit, we will never monetize. So we don't have marketing budget to go out and put up, you know, advertising everywhere on the internet or billboards or wherever. It's truly like, I want this. This is what I want. Why do people build anything? Why do we do anything? Because it's for me, number one. But I'm pretty sure you want it too. And so you got to build it.
That's beautiful. So people download Vexel. And like, subscribe, and brush your teeth. Please do all the things.
Yeah, let us know in the comments what you think about Vexel, and spread the word. Don't forget. And just as a thing, let's make sure to do this regularly. Come on, Grafton, to our show. You know, every few months or something, at least once a year, something like that. And let's spread the word together. That's the least we can do.
I mean, look, it's taken me a long time to get to where we are now. I mean, in Bitcoin, you know, is like everybody's panicking because the price is at what, 57 or something? So it's like people go crazy, but they also like, when Bitcoin drops, you know, what it is right now or whatever, like all of a sudden you look at Vexel and people are really using it. So there's like these periods of time where, because people are buying the dip, but people are also selling it as well. And so like you can see that. And by talking about it and understanding that there is a private marketplace out there where you can Vexel Bitcoin with your friends and friends of friends, like that's the biggest secret that's going on right now. It shouldn't be a secret. We have to build these tools for tomorrow, today, because if you look at what's happened with KYC and what's happening with Bitcoin, is the further we get away from that, you know, Satoshi's white paper, the more it starts to mirror our current financial system. And that scares me, because that's not what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin was rebel, you know?
Hey, Luke, why did the chicken brush his teeth?
Why, Knut? Do chickens even have teeth?
To get to the BitBox on the other side of the road.
What a fantastic idea. The BitBox is our favorite hardware wallet for a lot of reasons. It's easy to use, apparently also for chickens. BitBox cares about your security and your privacy. They take measures to make sure they're not collecting more information about you than they need to. And they also have fantastic customer support. They get rave reviews. So if you have any issues with your BitBox or you don't know how to use it for some reason, then they can help you out and take care of you.
So go to bitbox.swiss/freedom or use code freedom for 5% off your BitBox right now. Hey, Luke, what's the difference between a chickpea and a Bitcoin advisor?
What, Knut?
I never had a Bitcoin advisor on my face. But you could have one in your face, because we're Bitcoin advisors.
That's right, Knut. We're working with the Bitcoin advisor, and we're all about securing your Bitcoin for the long term. The Bitcoin advisor has a collaborative multi-sig solution so that you can secure your Bitcoin for the next 20 years and beyond. even if you lose one of your keys or something happens where it's an inheritance situation, they've got you covered and we can help you get there. So go to thebitcoinadvisor.com for more information, or you can reach out to us and book a call so that we can explain everything to you ourselves. Doesn't that sound awesome?
Sounds absolutely spectacular. It's basically boating accident insurance, isn't it?
Exactly. Although, you know, boating accidents, well,
you could have boating accidents anyway. Like, I mean, whatever.
Go to thebitcoinadvisor.com today.
Do the things.
So other than you and Slush, like how is Vexel connected to Satoshi Labs and Trezor and all that?
Yeah. So Vexel was Slush's idea, but we have Stick as well. So with Stick, Slush, they are the co-founders of Trezor, co-founders of Satoshi Labs. And Vexel is the newest project. We have Trezor, which is, you know, the OG hardware wallet. Then there is Tropic Square, which is aiming to be the world's first open source secure element.
Okay, so it's under the Satoshi Labs umbrella, so to speak.
It's under the umbrella. So our initial investment was funded through Satoshi Labs, but that's it. Now we are supported through grant for the last 6 months from OpenSats, and we're currently fundraising to kind of look at Nullster, to look at these things as well. So, but yeah, Satoshi Labs is our parent company because our co-founders created it.
Oh, wonderful. And as you say, I think that this massive weight of sort of the history and the companies in Czech Republic. I mean, there are other places that are starting to kind of pick up some steam, try to be these sort of Bitcoin destinations. But really, really cool to see kind of how that's all worked. And I mean, yeah, I think for my part with the Vexling of it, I definitely see the gradually and suddenly that you're talking about, that just got to get the contacts, and it incentivizes people to make these connections. And I mean, we're still early. As soon as you were starting to say, you know, the price has dipped and everything. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when $55,000 for one Bitcoin, that seemed like a lot. So
yeah, I mean, I remember when 600, I remember telling my mom to buy Bitcoin at like 600, and her response was, "Oh, it's too expensive. I'll wait for it to come down a little bit." And I mean, that's like, you know, I think the first time my mom really started looking at Bitcoin as a real thing was when Bitcoin hit 69,000, you know, and then she's like, all right, I should probably get some just in case, you know. And that's like, well, that's where we are with Bitcoin. I think we should all start looking at getting some just in case, but getting some no KYC Bitcoin just in case. I think that realistically we're going to wake up in 10 years and go like, okay, this was a nightmare of KYC hell. Everybody's information is all over the place and there's no going back. There's no resetting that. Once it's out there, you know, they leak how much Bitcoin you own or something. It seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah. Let's dig into this a little bit. How important is it, KYC versus non-KYC, in your view? Because I mean, you sort of described the picture, but non-KYC at the moment is difficult for newer people, at least as the first point of entry, compared to just go on whatever exchange pick. And I had a encounter recently locally with a guy who was trying to convince, I forget who he was related to her, but someone he knew, and she was saying that she actually did not want, I guess this guy was advocating non-KYC, but pushback was she wanted it to be KYC'd so that it was all above board and legal. And so it's just this funny opposite mindset, right, of how people think the world is supposed to be. But just to actually get to a point here is that in a certain extent, there's only 21 million, right? You have a certain percentage of Bitcoin on a hardware wallet in your possession. You keep the secret, only you know what that is, right? Well, you have it, whether it's KYC or not. But what's your view, I guess, of the nuance and the interplay between just simply having Bitcoin and KYC versus non-KYC Bitcoin?
Well, KYC thinks like, okay, so I saw an interesting discussion about this actually on Twitter recently, where he said that looking at KYC Bitcoin, it doesn't mean that, you know, your Bitcoin, your KYC follows you everywhere or whatever. And it says that it's know your customer. So what it means is, for you to be able to have Bitcoin, you have to have permission. And that's what KYC is for most of these like people, right? If you are Coinbase or Binance or any of these things, what they're saying is that we have this system, you can participate in it, but first we need to make sure it's okay that you participate in that system. And not everybody can do that. So for me, we have to make it as easy to buy Bitcoin for everyone as we do for the exchanges who make it easy to buy Bitcoin on their exchange because they've granted you permission. So when you look at, I mean, the BTC Pay Server movie was great because you go into El Salvador and you look at the dentist who'd never had a bank account, who was never able to save money to do this, or you have people who don't have identification or who are unbanked, who can't participate. What are they supposed to do? How do they get permission? And when you introduce permission into Bitcoin, well, that's not what Bitcoin is supposed to be. Like, Bitcoin should not have permission attached to it. You know, go and look at Canadian truckers protest, you know, is going, well, their bank accounts are frozen. You don't have permission. So you can't do anything because we're freezing your accounts, right? Your permission has been revoked. They can do that to you in 2022. They can do that to you tomorrow. For I saw an article of not wearing a hijab in Iran, they will freeze your bank account because you don't have permission to participate in their system. That's what KYC is to me. You know, looking at someone who says, well, we need to make sure that the coins that we're getting are not tainted, right? Or they're not blacklisted or this. And I go, well, what is tainted Bitcoin? Bitcoin's Bitcoin. So what it means is you don't have permission to spend that Bitcoin on that exchange. And I think that that's really, to me, why I see KYC as an enemy. Not because I'm trying to hide anything or anything like that. I'm just trying to protect myself and be able to have permissionless money.
No, I totally agree. And I think there's a cognitive dissonance here. And I hear it all the time because, like, there's so many people who want, like, Bitcoin to be legitimized by some fucking entity before they can take it seriously. And that is completely missing the point. Because if all Bitcoins were legitimized by someone, if they all required permission, then there is no 21 million cap anymore and there's no value proposition. Because then these people are able to censor and rule the network any way they want. So all the value propositions go away when it's not underground money anymore. So it needs we figured out a way to do money without government involvement, and that's the point. Like, if you want it to be permissioned, you have this cognitive like, it doesn't work. It's like saying, yeah, I love this invention, the wheel here, but okay, but I refuse to use a wheel to roll this thing down this hill until the government says it's okay for me to do so. Like,
can you imagine? Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of where we are. If you look at regulations, yeah. I mean, look at where we are with, the bottle cap in Europe. I think my camera died.
Your camera definitely died.
Yeah. Look at where we are with the bottle cap in Europe. You have to have, you know, different one. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah. But while he's fixing it, freezing of bank accounts if you're not wearing a hijab thing made me think of a rainbow hijab. Do you think there's such a thing as a rainbow hijab?
I mean, a lot of them are pretty colorful, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
You're okay. Good now. You're good. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the battery on it is something. We'll see if I have to message my guy. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about, a rainbow hijab. I mean, that's like people have such difficulty these days understanding what they're even for or against. And like, the, you know, saying, well, I want my Bitcoin to be legitimized. I mean, that's like, you know, the gays for Palestine saying, and like,
yeah, chickens for KFC.
Yeah, chickens for KFC. It's like you have I don't think that you really have so much idea what's going on. I think you're just whatever feels good in that moment.
No,
is what they're going
we,
for.
We, so. We go into this a lot in the new book about like the difference between legal and lawful. It's like there's been some libertarian writings about this and how lawful is something that is actually ethically and morally correct. And it's basically all property rights when you boil it down to essentials. And legal is just something that some guy at some institution came up with, regardless if there's a victim or not.
Well, I don't know if you've read, I told you, I think we talked about it in Poland or Warsaw, but I told you about a book called A Lodging of Wayfaring Men.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet. I will
send you, I'll send you a copy, because it's hard to find. But I think that you would really enjoy that book very much.
I like exclusively do audiobooks these days because I just don't have the time to sit down
I'm
and
not
read.
Sure. If there's not an audiobook, Kindle. There should be one. My dog is making an appearance.
Yeah. There's a Kindle version. That's it.
Yeah. I'm not sure if there's an audio one, but man, I think there should be. Maybe need to talk to Max Hildebrand and get him to record. I would listen to him.
The AI voices are good enough now. You could just like make some app read it for you, I guess.
Yeah. That'd be nice. I don't know if you've ever done like the immersion reading technique where you listen to a book and read it at the same time. Oh my God.
No,
all your experiences are good. This is all good. Yeah, and there's a similar language learning technique too. If you want to take it a whole other level, you listen to an audiobook in your target language, and you keep your native language and the target language at the same time. And it's like that's like the hardcorest way you can immerse yourself. Yeah. Doggo is getting the attention here, but I think that's appropriate.
Hey, doggy.
That's priorities in the right.
What's the name of the dog?
This is Ash. We call him Ash the Vexel Dog.
But Ash the Vexel Dog.
Yeah, he has his own Twitter account and everything. On Vexel, no one knows you're a dog. They just know that you have a lot of mutual friends.
But they will call you out if you try to sell the Dogecoin or Doggycoin, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, getting into that, so that's one of my favorite things ever is the first time I ever met, I don't know if you know this story, Luke, but we were in Miami 2022, you know, I'm fresh into working in Bitcoin. I'm very proud that I'm working in Bitcoin. I'm very proud that I work at Trezor, and the Trezor booth is right across from the book signing. And,
oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember this.
Cause
it's going to be over there. I was like, I got to get in to sign my book. So I went over and I was like, hey, I'm so glad to meet you. Will you please sign my book? He's like, yeah, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I work at Trezor. And he's like, oh, Trezor. He's like, yeah, you should tell them they're a bunch of shit coiners. All right. So I was like, well, I'm not sure how accurate that statement is if Trezor's a bunch of shit coiners. I mean, we've the reason you have 12 words.
I think you remember this. I have a slight different memory. I told them, like, you should do the Bitcoin only thing on top at least. Like, you should go Bitcoin only. Yes, you should. But at least you should put, like, the Bitcoin only firmware as the default.
And
I think there was some... I think you told me afterwards that it was something like that. They put Bitcoin on top whereas it wasn't before or something. Something's changed.
But... basically that moment it stuck in my head and it made me crazy, you know, because I'm like, what, you know, Trezor is we've, you know, contributed so much to Bitcoin and like we are Bitcoiners, like Trezor are Bitcoiners, like we have shitcoin, they have shitcoin, but like we do everything we do for Bitcoin. And so basically every time that I've seen Knut since, I have basically slightly insulted him, not insulted it, but like dug at him a little bit and be like, yeah, try to call me a shit coiner now, motherfucker. Yeah. And so like it worked, you know. And then in Prague, you were like, I think you said something, you're like, you're definitely not a shit coiner. I was like, yeah, finally it worked. Yeah, yeah.
I think even in Warsaw, I'd come around to that. But Trezor makes legit products. I still wish they would stop shitcoining completely. I stand by that and stand by that for every single hardware wallet manufacturer or everyone on earth should stop shitcoining immediately. But the product is good.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak on like too much of it, but I mean, Trezor, they're Bitcoiners. I mean, that's why, yes, they do have shitcoin. And I will say that the one thing I can, you know, add about that is that shitcoiners hopefully make Bitcoiners, and they never took look back. So, you know, a lot of people still in their minds, they go, I'm looking for the next Bitcoin. And that's like, I've heard that from my friends. I've heard that from everyone. You know, my normal friends who are like, oh, I'm going to get the next Bitcoin. I'm trying to find the next one. And I'm like, you know, I go to Sailor. There is no.
Yeah, there is still second bet.
Yeah,
that's still going on. But that's why I'm so irritated with shitcoins, because they are the attack. Like people who fall for them and then get burned, that likely they won't come back to Bitcoin until 10 years down the line. Then when they realize, oh, it was Bitcoin all along. Like, and I think for the most part, that process coming to Bitcoin only mentally, could be faster if there weren't all of these bullshit narratives about the.
Well, yeah, I'm open personally that I started with Ethereum in 2017, and my office, my personal local community, was only into Ethereum for whatever reason, and that's the only thing I bought. And then everything crashed, and I didn't think about it for 4 years, and then things start going up, and I go down the rabbit hole, whatever. But yeah, I started in shitcoins, and possibly I missed the boat by 4 years, and that's too bad for me, but you know, no regrets. But
I mean, I get Knut's point, which is that if you provide this place for shitcoiners to put their shitcoin, what you're doing is in a way validating that, like,
oh, exactly. Yeah.
I agree with you in that point. You know, and I have had shitcoin in my life. You know, I'm not saying that I've never had a shitcoin. I had Litecoin back in like 2012 or some shit. And I had some Ethereum like the day that it was out. I was like, oh, you know, I was playing around with stuff because I was naturally curious. But, you know, it's like the meme of the guy where it's like each level, you know, you get is eventually you do get to where Bitcoin is like that giant laser eyes, you know, going out where you go, no, this is it. This is what it is.
And then again, like there's something too that there needs to be, like if Bitcoin goes to shit or some code that we don't like get implemented, we need to be able to fork off and do our own thing. And like, so there's something to that, but still legitimizing this fucking dodgy coins and Ethereum being the mother asshole, how Saifedean put it so poetically, the mother asshole from which all other shitcoins are spawned. I mean, and putting that side by side with Bitcoin is like, what's the analogy? It's like you have this, you have the most beautifully marbled ribeye steak, Angus steak or Wagyu steak, and you can buy this, or you can buy for the same price, eat the bug's dog food here that is, but I promise it will be as tasty. Like it's not even a bad, it's not even a good analogy, but the whole thing is you put the best thing in the universe next to the scammiest fucking trash shit that has ever been created. That's where the similarities end.
Well, that's what you mean. I think the problem, one of the biggest problems stems from the fact that something like CoinMarketCap and CoinGecko exist. It's like, here's a cap is Bitcoin. Like, I don't give a shit for me. It's like when I turn on and look at the price, if I go to CoinGecko, it's like, of course you look at what Bitcoin's number one, that's really all you need to see. But then you start, you know, you find your eyes going down the line, or, you know, you're curious, you're looking, and like, that's what most people are doing, is they're going to these websites and aping into this bullshit.
Yeah. You see things like, I don't know who it is, Pete Rizzo, I think it is, who posts these threads about, this guy is a Bitcoin legend because blah, 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 blah. And he's been doing a good job at it. And then all of a sudden, Eric Voorhees shows up there, and it's all this, oh, Eric Voorhees did this and this, that and that year, and how awesome he is. And he leaves out the whole thing that he started an exchange where you could switch your Bitcoin for shit. And he took a cut every time he did that. And that's the entire purpose of that fucking site. It's that to enrich him at the expense of everyone else thinking that the shit they're exchanging their precious sats for is somehow worth something in the long run, which it isn't. It's just fucking scams, all of it.
Yeah. But that's why, like, going from one coin into another and doing this, it's like, nah, we go back to like, I'll give you some Bitcoin for some honey or for some eggs, you know?
Exactly.
Like, that's what, you know, it is. We hear this every day, value for value, but like, I enjoy spending my Bitcoin, you know? Like, I know that's weird to say for most people because they look at it as like, oh, you know, hold on. But even when Bitcoin drops or whatever, I have, you know, stuff that I still like, I spend. And like my cleaning lady, she's this lady from Ukraine. She does clean. I don't need her, but I've had her now. And so like, she's kind of grandmawed in now. I have her, but slowly it started. She goes, why do you have so many of these like Trezor t-shirts? What is this? You know? And then she starts learning about my, you know, I go, well, I have a colleague who also wants his house clean. And so then, you know, you have all these people from here who are start talking to her about Bitcoin. And now I told her, I was like, okay, every time I pay you, I'm going to give you this much in fiat, which is what I know that you want, that you need. But then I'm going to give you this 10 euros. I'm going to pay you in Bitcoin every time. And you should see her now. Like ever since I've been doing this is she gets her Lightning, you know, her QR code ready. I pay her and she gets really excited because she feels that she's saving and doing something different. And
oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah. About the spending versus hodling, we have a section in the book about that because I think the terminology is what's wrong. Like, so the term store of value is flawed. Because value is subjective, right? That's basic, the most basic building block of economics. Value is subjective. So so we prefer, we try to introduce the term value, medium of exchange over time and medium of exchange over space. So there's a temporal dimension and the spatial dimensions. And gold was good for the temporal stuff because it held its value over time, and fiat's good for the spatial spread of money because it's good over space. But Bitcoin does both. And it also, like, introducing medium of exchange over time sort of kills the whole narrative that saving and spending are different. They're just two aspects of the same functionality. It's just that when you save, you're trading with your future self. So you're still trading, but with your future self, and then you trade over space. So I like, I don't really like the dichotomy between the two. Like, use your Bitcoin. You can use them in many ways. Hodling is one use case. It is using them. They are providing you with something, with financial stability, security, like self-esteem. All of that comes with having a stack, right?
Going to, you know, it's like, I remember, you know, going to conferences and these things, and you always see like this much Bitcoin was processed, you know, during the conference of people buying everything from t-shirts to, you know, we like it because we, of course, it's for me is that's what Bitcoin is I travel so much and I'm in different countries, whether that's Warsaw or Madeira, and I'm the Euro, I'm in the Czech crown here. It's like, of course, I enjoy spending Bitcoin. But also, like, because we're Bitcoiners, there is something truly satisfying about doing that and giving your Bitcoin to somebody else for something of value. And I think that that's where it starts to click for a lot of people is, and that's where I went with like my cleaning lady is, you know, you can tell her to buy Bitcoin and she won't do it. Or I can just start giving her some of my own and paying for her and saying, well, here, I want to do this. Will you accept it? And if they accept those terms and they start doing it, then eventually they go, well, all right, now I have something because they can see the fiat value there. So they go, oh, I have something I need to protect this. I need to learn more. And that's what I did with my friend, Gary. You know, at the beginning of the call, we said there's always problems with audio or whatever. It's like I played games online in the evening with my friend for years. So we were used to being, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning talking bullshit online. And a lot of that time, it, you know, it gets on philosophy, it gets on Bitcoin, it gets on just life in general. And that was one of the ways I did it with him was like, dude, just like, all right, every time we go to dinner and I pay, I'm going to pay you my portion in Bitcoin. That was what made sense to him. And he goes, okay, I can live with that, right? And then he got to the point where, all right, I kind of have a lot of Bitcoin now. You've been paying for a lot of dinners. That's the way it worked with him. So you have to kind of find those people who are skeptical or who aren't sure about how to do it or whatever. Because if someone says, all right, how do I buy it? That's a hard question to answer right now. Because, you know, you don't want to get into the nuances of KYC or, you know, this. It's like, well, that's where Vexil, and that's why we, you know, we talked about, we wanted to create something that my aunt, my uncle, or anybody could use.
The thing I really want to encourage people to do is earn Bitcoin or accept Bitcoin for the goods and services or for whatever, because that's the true hyper Bitcoinization of yourself, like when you accept it. So yeah, and if you have one sat more than you had last year, you're an absolute 100% winner in every sense of the word. That's financial advisor is the easiest job in the world right now.
Well, and that's what we, you know, I remember seeing, you know, just how, you know, Vexil we created for buying and selling Bitcoin, but then people went like, okay, so I do backend development. I post an offer on here, and then the next thing you know, they have a job where they're earning Bitcoin doing backend development. Where I talked to one guy who was literally working for a bank, put an offer on Vexil for backend development, and was like, ah, I can do this, and then started earning money in Bitcoin through Vexil. So met through money through Vexil. So it is pay your, you know, talk to your cleaning ladies, talk to your dog walkers, talk to these people, and say, hey, do you accept Bitcoin? And if they don't, you know, play by their rules, you know, let them go, hey, okay, I'll give you fiat, but can I give you a little bit of a tip in Bitcoin? And just kind of, if you're not forcing it, but you're giving them something. And then that's how, when people start to perceive value, they go, okay, maybe this does have something to it. So I, you know, in looking at communities and, you know, meetups, my camera turned off again. Meetups.
Perfect. And I mean, just keep going.
Stuff like that. You really do like, need to be able to answer those questions for people who go, okay, there's a Bitcoin meetup in my town. I go along. They're going to ask people, how do I buy it? Well, we have to have some way to do that that doesn't incentivize them to give away all their private information.
True that. Grafton, I'm really sorry how we could have gone on for another 2 hours if we had the time, but we're sort of running short today, unfortunately. Super grateful that you came on, and looking forward to seeing you in real life next time, where we'll have a longer chat there.
I'm sure it won't be long, but thank you guys really for having me on. And we can, yeah, we can do it again in a year or so when we have a lot more bigger network, hopefully. But please check out Vexil. If you don't know anything about it, if you have curious, like, you can find me. I'm Sats Disco, like, everywhere. And check out our website, vexil.it. We're not from Italy, but it's like, how do you get Bitcoin? You Vexil it. So check us out. And then please, like, let me know if you have a meetup, if you're going to meetups, if you have a community, reach out, get in touch. We want to help you, build private peer-to-peer communities. So,
fantastic. Check cool. out Vexil, brush your teeth, buy your toothbrush with Bitcoin somehow. And, yes. Yeah, see you in the next one.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grafton. This has been the Free Footprint Show. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to leave us a comment. Let us know what you think, and spread the word. Thanks again, Grafton. This has been the Free Footprint Show.